Welcome, everyone. You're listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. I am your host today, Jesse Kiefer, producer of The Morning After. This is my first day in the host chair, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Jen Tulloch. Jen, how do I look today? And be descriptive and honest, please.
Jesse, I've never seen you look better. You are rocking that flannel I haven't seen since the Cobain days.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's, you know, one of my biggest influences is grunge.
I know that.
Absolutely.
I know
that's
that
what I'm
going
to be taking to the show today. We have a great lineup. In studio, Kevin Mahan, managing partner of Gramercy Tavern, as well as David Trotta, director of operations for Jack's Stir Brew. And along with him is James Dalton, who is his mandolin player. And David's a multi-talented gentleman, obviously. He plays guitar in a band called Trotta and Ronstadt. And you were telling me earlier, just like Linda Ronstadt, actually.
Yeah, Michael, the cello player, is Linda Ronstadt's nephew.
That's fantastic. So I love the name. And so happy to see Jen across from me.
It's lovely to be here with you, Miss Kiefer.
Thank you so much. We debuted a new segment last week called Front of House. And it's kind of about front of house mishaps that I'm sure a lot of the listeners have been through. And today's chapter two.
Yeah, on both sides of the fence. Now, I'm not going to betray our ages, Jesse, because we're both young bucks still. Mm-hmm. But you and
Thank
I both
you.
Worked in the industry for a number of years. And we all know what it's like to have a server who perhaps is new to the biz and is having a bit of a struggle. So in today's segment of Front of House, I'd like to visit a time when I was that server.
Oh, the suspense. Do we get to guess what restaurant this is again?
So as part of the great mystery of the Front of House sequence, we always, at the end of the show, I think are going to try to guess which restaurant we're talking about. Now, each of these stories are written with love. Ooh, here we go. Here we go. Roll us in with that theme music, Jack. All right, ladies and gentlemen. When I was hired as a server at Restaurant X, my only previous service experience was a Marriott retirement community and 2 weeks at a Texas Roadhouse in Decatur, Illinois. By the grace of a few friends and a series of blatant lies, I found myself working at a fine dining French bistro on 43rd Street. I was terrified of being exposed as an imposter, which is what I was, and desperately needed the money, so I told myself I'd just keep a low profile. This, I would soon find out, is impossible in a well-lit room with three caffeinated managers. I was constantly being criticized for my lack of wine knowledge, told to carry plates differently, reminded to serve from the left and clear from the right, and above all, to crumb the tables. To leave a table uncrumbed at Restaurant X was met with the same disdain as leaving your baby in a hot car. Now, of the many tedious devil rituals they force you to perform in fine dining, few are less important than the art of crumbing. Crumbing, for those of you less familiar, is the process of taking a tiny metal shoehorn-looking device and scraping it along the table until all the crumbs are swept onto a napkin or a bread plate. Now, I didn't yet know the difference between a Bordeaux and a Burgundy glass, but goddammit, I could crumb. This particular spring day, I'd been assigned to work brunch, otherwise known as Mimosa Purgatory, and was pleased to learn I would be serving a celebrity. Madam Celebrity, as we shall call her, was a TV star on a hit show and a frequent guest at Restaurant X. She was infamously particular, and I knew if I could nail this, my job would be safe for at least a few more shifts. Now, the first half of her brunch was a breeze. Wine was poured, food was delivered, coffee was hot. And then it happened. As Madam Celebrity was finishing the last bite of her BLT, I noticed the owner of Restaurant X, a 6-foot-tall Texan, looming behind me. We made eye contact, at which point he cleared his throat and stared at Madam Celebrity's table. I smiled back at him, confused. He cleared his throat again and pointed. I had not crumbed. Fine, I thought. This is fine. Just grab a bread plate and do the damn thing. But there was no bread plate on the table, and the server station was on the other side of the restaurant. My mouth went dry from panic, and I proceeded on pure animal instinct. Grabbing Madam Celebrity's nearly empty wine glass, I swept all of the table's crumbs into the glass, hands shaking violently. Not a graceful execution, I thought, but the deed is done. It was then that Madam Celebrity grabbed my wrist and pinned it to the table with 5 bony witch fingers, forcing my face closer to hers. I wasn't finished with the wine. My time at Restaurant X, however, was totally finished. My neck was saved 3 days later when it was announced that Restaurant X was up for sale, so I was let go, quote-unquote, with everyone else instead of being fired, which is what I totally deserved. I learned a lot that spring about wine regions, about coursing, how to tie a tie. But most importantly, I learned that in this whirlwind business of food, you just never, ever take wine from an old lady. Thank you.
Incredible. All right.
350 people in studio today.
Whole people, exactly. We're going to move on to break. We're all going to debate what restaurant this was, and we're going to come back with Kevin Mahan, managing partner of Gramercy Tavern, and we're definitely going to ask him about crumbing.
So far, support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host today, Jesse Kiefer, producer of The Morning After, along with my fabulous co-host, Jen Tulloch.
Howdy doody.
Coming into our next segment, I am incredibly excited to have in studio Kevin Mahan, managing director of Gramercy Tavern.
It's great to be here.
Good to see you. So this is kind of, Danny Meyer, he's huge deal in New York City. Kind of the epitome of hospitality. I was thinking of it like some people have a come to Jesus moment. What was your come to Danny moment?
That's a very interesting question. I think it had to do with me personally. Just in life, I had basically gotten through up until 2000, early 2000s, coming up here. Just I put my head down. I worked. I didn't really care. I cared that I was doing well, but I didn't care that I was getting any real feedback or positive reinforcement because I probably didn't get much earlier on in life, and I just wanted to work harder and harder and just kept. I would work my fingers to the bone, and one day he stopped me and he said, I was a manager for a year or two, and he stopped and said, "I just want to let you know you're doing a great job," and I deflected it, just like I deflected so many other compliments. And I was like, no. And he grabbed me, probably much like the five-finger, but not as scary. And he just said, "Listen, I gave you a compliment, and you needed it, and you deflected it." He goes, "That's your problem." And I'll never forget. I tell that story all the time because here I was working that. If there was any one thing that I was working towards, it was that moment. It was what he gave me. And I was in my mindset just, tunnel vision and just was like, no. And I wasn't going to. And I through my, clenched teeth said, thank you. But from there on, that was a moment where it just, for me and him and just how hard we all work, but not only being able to work that hard, but be also being able to appreciate your own successes. If there was a clear moment with me and Danny, not about my career with him, but that was a moment he and I had together that I will never forget. That was great. So,
and I mean, to have someone like him, and I'm assuming you were just feeling like there's no way I'm living up to these standards.
I don't even think I was. I even thought that I was on the scale. Yeah, like you just coming into New York and being at a place like that, and within a company of, I just, a lot of people say it when they come to our company. Like I just never experienced anything like that, where you work so hard but are also taken care of so well. And It was, yeah, but I definitely felt like I was far from even making the grade. So I had hoped, but I wasn't about to even like stop to say, hey, am I doing okay? I just, it wasn't in my nature. I just wanted to keep moving forward. So.
And how long have you been there at this point?
That was probably a year or two.
A year or two in? And then how long have you been working?
I had been there less, just under a year when I became a manager. And then it was probably my first year being a manager that was that moment for me.
And how long have you been there from there
now?
On? Yeah.
I just had my 13-year anniversary.
Oh, wow. Lucky 13. Congrats.
Can't you see the gray?
Yeah. No, not at all.
Bar mitzvah. You've had your Gramercy Tavern bar mitzvah.
Amazing. I mean, and you talking about like living up to the standards and not feeling on the scale. I mean, the way, you know, someone coming in as a guest feels so taken care of there. It's good to hear that you feel taken care of, but how do you keep that like hospitality face on constantly? Because we all know in the industry, like, things get ugly.
Well, I think that one of the things, I mean, the different kind of environment or climate, if you will, is that so many places and people that, and I've worked at them too, is you're working more in fear of like waiting for the shoe to drop or waiting to get caught crumbing into a wine glass, or, and then that being not a moment for you to learn and a lesson, but a reason to like, you know, break you and throw you out the door. And that's not what the whole, that's definitely not what Danny and the whole company are about. And, you know, we've all had bad days. We've all made mistakes, or we've all, you know, never been in that situation before. So it's, I think that that's one thing, is that it is a two-way street. We have so many people that are in this business that are not in this business for life. This is my career. Mm-hmm. But we've had along the way to just kind of develop a relationship with the staff that we do have, like, whether it's riding their dogs, sailing, it doesn't really matter what it is, but a dialogue and a two-way street that I'm hopefully going to get you to a schedule that helps you take care of what you love, mm-hmm. whether it's your partner, what doesn't matter. But when you walk in this store, I'm going to make it very clear what's important to me. And that's adult, it's fair, it's a relationship, it's a dialogue, and that it's, you know, it's, and people want, when it's, you know, if somebody comes up and says, oh my God, I have the most amazing audition tomorrow, if I've known that person long enough, or, you know, just to get to know them, and they say that to me, and they say, and I'm going to try to get my shift cover, I'm going to look at them and say, don't worry about it. You know, it's
a family.
Yeah. And I think that when it feels like, listen, we do work really hard, mm-hmm. and it is hard to keep that hospitality face on some of the times when it's crazy busy. But I think when you're somebody on the side of the restaurant, and you know that the restaurant, the owners, the rest of the team have your back and care about what you care about, it makes a world of difference.
And I would imagine elicits the hardest work from your servers. I mean, as I'm speaking from that perspective, and I know that's the kind of management I work the hardest for and in the most honest way.
Yeah.
Because if it's an open line of communication, like you said, that's the best way to execute what is otherwise a very difficult thing to execute, which is the art of running a floor.
Yeah. I mean, and we give people the opportunity to surprise us, not disappoint us, you know, not, mm-hmm. we're not setting people up to, mm-hmm. That's the worst thing is when I, you know, I interviewed a young woman years ago now, and she was at one of these, you know, 3-4-star French restaurants who, I was just like, well, how's it going? She goes, well, they trained me for one day and then put me on the floor. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. That's not, I mean, that is setting someone up to fail. And that's easy to do in this business and in this town, because the demands and the expectations of the client, of the guest in this town are unmatched. So.
I mean, and especially at Gramercy Tavern.
They're high.
They're high. They are. How long has Gramercy been around? How many years? Actually,
we
don't
just
know.
Had our 18-year anniversary.
Wow.
In July.
So I, you know, to talk about Gramercy Tavern makes me want to talk about 11 Madison Park and Will Gadara and Daniel Hume. And there's been a lot of press on them about kind of reinventing themselves or reinventing service or reinventing what they're doing. How does Gramercy kind of reinvent and keep itself 18 years old feeling fresh?
For me, it's in the team that we attract. We are always looking and pushing. If somebody wants to be in this business, they're going to come in, and we're going to push them very hard to be. Somebody says, listen, I want to be a manager in this company. As soon as they say that, they raise their hand, they put their name in the hat, we start acting and treating them like that, and start pointing out places where, listen, this, you know, where this is not representative of somebody that wants to be a manager or even a captain or a bartender. And we're following their lead. You know, if you want to be pushed, we're going to push you. And what that ends up doing for us is we push a lot of people out. Like, we push them to the point where it's time for them to either go be beverage director somewhere, or a GM or AGM or whatever it might be, or they're there while they get their master's degree at Columbia and then leave. Like, and I think it's a constant influx and rotation of just great, driven, intelligent people that come into that restaurant who, when you sit down, they may not be career waiters, but they're going to be passionate and smart, and just I think that's it, and that's in the back of the house as well, because there's a lot of people that have been in this business industry front and back that don't want to do this forever, but I think that young, driven energy, and we always look to have people add to our to what we're doing. I don't care if you've been there for 5 days. If you have a great idea, you have a great idea, and it should be something that we should consider and incorporate. And that's an open dialogue always. And I think that, again, going back to the fear thing, I think a lot of people go down and just don't want to get in trouble and don't want to. And at a lot of places where you say, hey, at my last restaurant, the first thing they say is, we're not your last restaurant. It's like, you know what? Maybe they were doing it better at their last restaurant, whatever it might be, you know, the expediting of food or, you know, the polishing glasses. I don't know what it might be, but we're never against like a great idea to get us better. And I think that that whole energy of attracting young, talented, inspired people and being willing to change, because we've changed so many things over 18 years, whether it's the mise trays we use or how we ring up stuff or the organization of the bar or the barista station. You know, it's you can think that you know it all and are doing it perfectly, but you're not.
I mean, yeah, there is always a way to do it better.
Always.
And I mean, and with you talking about new blood, I can only imagine with, I'm sure you have hardcore regulars at Gramercy.
Yes.
And for someone who's been coming in for 18 years, to have new people to talk to and have new conversations, I'm sure that actually, yeah, creates a new feeling for them as well.
It is a new feeling. But for me, I just had this conversation with Danny last week, is that this is one of the biggest challenges, and I've wanted to find a way to thank our regulars for retraining our staff. Like, because you have regulars that we've known for, you know, 3 to 11 years who have very particular, you know, likes. They like that particular seat at the bar, or they like the ice on the side with their iced tea. It doesn't really matter what it is, but it takes a lot of effort, in my opinion, on our regulars to go through the whole process of, you know, a couple of years ago, we changed over the entire bar team. That was hard for some of our regulars. You know, they know that we're going to take care of them at the end of the day, that if we see them and I walk by and they don't have the particular bread that they like, that, you know, that we grilled, I'm going to get it. But it's for them, it's a process of kind of being part of this project. And I wish there was a way to kind of, that they do a lot of the heavy lift for us as well, which is just a...
They're quality control.
Yeah, they are.
I was on the Gramercy website, and I remember having a conversation with you probably a few months ago about vintage beer.
Yeah.
And I understand, you do the vintage beer list, right?
I do the whole beer list now. That was one of the things that I think got me locked in with Paul Greco back in the day, was because I hope I'm not telling Paul
Greco
out.
Paul Greco was a captain at Gramercy Tavern.
He was
and
a captain,
beverage director.
And then he created a role for himself that everybody in the business hates him for, because he was the AGM service director and beverage director. So there's the impossibilities of living up to that are just endless. So and worked 4 nights on the floor, you know Wednesday through Saturday night, which is all of that said, but back then when I was there as the first year manager and he was the beverage director, I kind of wrestled the beer program away from him back then, because he didn't really have considering what he had on his plate, didn't have the time. And he wasn't nearly as passionate as he is now about beer and knowing about it and appreciating it. And I think he was just, and the beer world in New York at that time in 2000 was drastically different.
What was craft beer? Sierra Nevada?
No, craft beer at the time you had the choice of was Rogue, Carol Stouds, you had Brooklyn, and Southampton was around, but other than that you had a stretch. And now the difficulty is choose like what not to put on mm-hmm. the list versus then. Kevin Gary, one of our managers, he's the director of operations for the I don't remember the name of, but the Dell'Anima group, Dell'Anima Lartuzzi guys.
Yeah, I think I've met him.
He was a manager of ours and assistant beverage director. And we had some vintages of beer on our list, on our regular list. And he said, why don't we do a vintage page? And
Does anyone else do that?
Not that I know of. I mean, going back to 11 Madison Park, mm-hmm. they may. Mm-hmm. I know they have an incredible beer list as well. And I know that after we did ours... Blind Tiger, who I know Dave and those guys over there, they put up a chalkboard. Because they had their own inventory and library of beers. They also have some vintage beers on right now. But as other restaurants, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. But
well, it's been so great talking to you.
It's been great to be here.
Cut us at beer, but we will be moving on to another beverage shortly. Going to take a break. We're going to come back with David Trotta, Director of Operations for Jack Stir Brew Coffee. The morning after.
Message from the Heritage Meat Shop.
Are you tired of just hearing buzzwords? Do you want to actually take part in the food revolution? Then come on down to the Heritage Meat Shop, located in New York's historic Essex Street Market, on the corner of Essex and Delancey. We have rare breed pork, beef, poultry, lamb, and goat, not to mention charcuterie that'll make you squeal. All raised right by the right people, so you know they'll taste right. Try the meat that over 100 New York chefs ache for. Come to the Heritage Meat Shop and pick up some revolution today.
For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com.
Work. Happy to be in studio today with a good friend of mine, who happens to be the director of operations at my favorite coffee place in New York City, David Trotta, a multi-talented man, musician, and coffee expert. Here with us today to talk about Jack's. Now, let's start with the name, David. Jack's Stir Brew Coffee. Can you tell us what that actually means?
Well, I think there's two parts of that, because everybody will come in and say, there actually is a Jack? So, yeah, first off, there is a Jack. Jack lives above our 10th Street location.
How old is he? I imagine him being...
He's 106 years old.
You know what? No one knows. The current poll is saying that he's 37, but I think he might be older than that.
Oh, that's disappointing.
He looks good.
A young fellow.
Yeah. He's like 42. It's a mystery. So Jack Stir Brew Coffee, what is Stir Brew Coffee? Jack actually patented a brewer called the Stir Brewer. When he was conceiving the store, the first inception of the store was, I want to own my own business and I want to create a sense of community. So I was like, okay, perfect. Coffee shop. Everybody's third place. Go to work, you go home, go to a coffee shop. Everybody can come hang out. And the whole idea about a sense of community, Jack's a North Jersey Italian guy like me. That's why we get along. The relationship works very well. He would always be in the Italian American club. His dad owned the auto body shop in town. So he was doing it right. Yeah, he was doing it right. Totally. So he kind of wanted to recreate that whole feeling. He's like, okay, perfect. A coffee shop. So he's running around the city, finding little single origin roasts, trying to pick out, the blend for the coffee shop, because he's like, I have to make my own blend. So he'd grab a pound of coffee, come home, grind it up, throw it in the French press, and, when you French press, you stir the coffee. So he's thinking, why is there no coffee maker that stirs the coffee
Wall of Brews. This has got to be made. This is my thing. I want to do something unique. I want to do something different. I want to bring the best product I can to the market, and I think this is the way to do it. So he hooks up with his dad's friend, Ronnie, out in Jersey, who's a great engineer, and they build the prototype. And then they build the first machine, and they open the store with a stir brewer.
Now, are the current models you use still essentially that same prototype?
I mean, it's still the same basis, but we're on to, you know, the fourth generation of
a little more bells and whistles now.
Yeah, there's some more bells and whistles, different angles for the motors, you know,
sure.
Parts that don't burn you anymore. You know, it's nice.
Always a positive.
It's a lot easier to
don't want
to
burn
now.
The baristas. Burn the barista. It sounds like a really bad coffee and music festival. So there are three locations. You've got my favorite, which I worked on the road in the West Village. I get to see you very often on
the
sidewalk.
Is that the original?
Yeah, West 10th is the original location.
Okay.
About 9 years
now. So you've got that. But now you guys are out in the Hamptons.
Yes.
Right? And also on South Street Seaport.
Yes. The Seaport was the second store. We had a pop-up in the Hamptons that we opened 3 years ago. And then we moved into a full 1,500 square foot space 2 summers ago. And it's, we just have a blast out there in the summer with everybody. But we're a year-round location. And we also have a new location opening up on 6th and Downing in about 4 weeks.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations.
Right next to 10 Downing. It's cool. We'll have a full commissary in the back. We do a cold-pressed juice program, so we're going to be moving that out of that location and kind of ferrying that to the other stores. And we actually just hired a pastry chef as well. We're going to be slowly turning over all of the pastry items in our case.
Great.
Yeah.
Will you still have those chocolate chip cookies?
The Aunt Rosie's cookies are, you know, they're a house recipe. They will always be around, so you don't have to worry.
I'm saying this with my hand on every holy text I've ever read. That is the best chocolate chip cookie I've ever had in my life.
I mean, baked fresh in-house.
$1.
How can you go wrong with that?
Anyone who is near any of these locations should run, not walk, to get one of these chocolate chip cookies. I'm serious. If you're lucky enough, sometimes if you go in around the 5 o'clock hour, you'll get them when they're just coming out of the oven.
Ooh. They're in and out all day.
I mean,
you can get lucky and get
delicious.
A nice warm Rosie's cookie.
Now, David, you mentioned the cold pressed juices, which is something I want to talk about, because what I love about Jack's, obviously in New York, we're not hard pressed to find a coffee place, but I think we are hard pressed to find a really good coffee place that's doing incredibly interesting stuff that doesn't just have to do with coffee. And one of my favorite items for sale at Jack's are the series of cold pressed juices. My favorite being Mr. Green, I believe it's called.
Yes, Mr. Green.
Mr. Green. So what is it? What's the process of making a cold pressed juice, and how does that differ from getting a juice anywhere else?
So, I mean, there's two ways that, you know, you can generally make juice. And the way that most people are familiar with is the way that they do it at home, generally. It's that kind of shreds everything up. It actually rips apart the cell wall of the plant and oxidizes all the nutrients and the enzymes. So you kill off a lot of the good stuff in the way that most people make juice. The way we do it, and the way that's kind of becoming popular around the city, is cold pressing. You mash all the fruit or the vegetables into a pulp. That's actually put in a silk bag, and it's hydraulically pressed. So you don't rip anything apart, and everything stays intact. So it has 3 to 5 times more of the vitamins and nutrients, and all the enzymes are still, you know, together.
Beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I call Jack's, the West Village location specifically, the House of Power, because I worked on the block, and if I'm feeling under the weather or tired, I come and I get one of those Mr. Green juices, which I think has, what is it, broccoli, kale?
The Mr. Green is kale, ginger. Spinach, apple, cucumber, lemon, and ginger.
Beautiful.
And a little bit of celery.
And then you get a finely pulled espresso and a delicious organic apple, which brings me to another thing I wanted to ask you about. All of the dairy in-house at Jack's comes from the Hudson Valley Fresh Cooperative.
Yes.
Which is so cool. So it's local dairy. What's the relationship between Jack
and
that co-op been like?
Jack's was the first place to carry Hudson Valley Fresh in New York.
Really?
We kind of pioneered Hudson Valley Fresh, brought them into the city. You know, Sam Simon was, you know, driving around just shopping milk to everybody, and Jack and him met, and that was like a match made in heaven from there on out.
Now, have they been on board since the beginning of Jack's?
They used to use something a little bit different. They came on very, very shortly, within like the first year.
Okay. Awesome.
So we kind of grew together.
Amazing. Now, when I met you, it was in a different context, and you've since taken over at Jack's, and it's been such a cool thing to watch, because you're obviously, you know, you've been beautifully paired, and you guys are doing such cool things together. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between director of operations and an owner, and a company specifically like Jack's, where Jack's obviously incredibly proactive. He's incredibly involved. He's hands-on. He's there frequently. And you're his right-hand man. So is this a matter of Jack sort of starts out the week and says, okay, this is what's going down. I'm going to send you to one of the three locations. Are you mobile? Are you in one store versus another?
I'm pretty mobile. You know, I check in with the managers, you know, daily. I mean, obviously the Hampton store, I would love to be able to go out there daily, but that's like a once a week thing. But, you know, for the most part, Jack is an innovator. He's always coming up with new ideas, and I just kind of have to run behind him and catch them in a box and try and organize everything because, you know, the train is going very fast, and, you know, you gotta kind of hold on.
Yeah. Now, you pull a certain type of espresso shot.
So we pull a triple ristretto shot.
Okay, that's what I thought. Now, what does that mean? It's a little bit longer?
Triple ristretto refers to the fact that the basket that holds the coffee has enough coffee in it to, or enough espresso to make three shots of espresso, and we pull that into a double shot. So it's a double shot pulled through three times the amount of espresso.
And twice the punch.
Yeah, it's got a kick to it.
So we were talking to Kevin earlier about the style of management, and I think in the New York food and wine and beverage industry, of having to look after your flock, essentially, and having to have their backs, because so many of us in this industry do other things as well. That's the New York norm. So many actors and writers and musicians, such as yourself. And it's been so cool for me as your friend to watch someone like Jack as a boss give you the opportunity not only to flourish in this role, but also to take time off and do a tour, for example, which you just got back from.
Yes.
Right? And how was that?
That was really, really good. You know, I play with a group called Trotta and Ronstadt, and I have James Dalton here with me, so we usually go by Trotta, Ronstadt, and Dalton. And we were able to go out to Utah and Nevada and play 10 shows in 4 days and just have a blast. So I'm very, very lucky to have a boss that says, you know what, take your vacation time and go on tour, but you better be back, and we're going to grind.
You better get back here.
Yeah,
do
it's coffee
thing.
Season in the city. You need to get back.
Any
right
any memorable food experiences on tour and God's Grand Midwest?
Yeah, the best you know, food experience was we get invited to this gentleman's house. He says, oh, you know what? He's been watching us the whole time at the festival. He says, you gotta come by. Just pick some apples and peaches at the shop tomorrow. We're like, what? Okay, whatever. Stop by. This guy lives in the Garden of Eden. There's, you know, cows, sheep, ducks, geese, pigeons, every possible fruit and vegetable you can imagine. A dog and a cat, of course. And, you know,
peacocks.
Yeah, ducks.
No, two peacocks.
Oh, two peacocks.
Yeah, two peacocks, yeah. A horse.
Noah's Ark was parked out back, yeah, and he was loading it up.
He's like, it looks like rain, guys. Hop
yeah, exa-
in.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Well, I'm excited to talk to you more about your music, which is what we're going to do when we come back from a quick break. Thank you so much, David, for talking to us. And in a moment, we're going to hear from Trotta, Ronstadt, and Dalton. We're here in the Morning After on Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Morning After. I'm your host, Jesse Kiefer, here with my lovely co-host, Jen Tulloch. We are going to shortly hear from Trotta
and
Ronstadt
and
Dalton, not to be forgotten, who has a mandolin, which I'm incredibly excited to check out. But I just wanted to remind all of our listeners, if you like what you're hearing today, we have tons of great shows on Heritage Radio Network. And, you know, you can donate, you can become a member and keep us all rocking.
I just got my membership card today, and I gotta tell you, they're slick.
She's gonna try to use it at Macy's. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. I'm gonna try to get some shoes.
But it's super easy. You just go online and you pick how much you want to donate, and you get some great discounts. Heritage Meat Shop, Saxo Bee Cheese, and I don't know. I'm excited about it, and it's so great for us to be able to have the community donate to what we work so hard on every week for you.
And cool to be a part of a thing that's ever growing. We're a young network that's doing some really cool stuff and starting to get a lot of attention. So I would urge you to go and check out not just our program, but the others as well. And on that note, Ms. Kiefer, it has been a true pleasure.
It's been wonderful to talk to you.
Trotta
through microphones.
Trotta and Dalton, would you play us out?
Oh, it would be our pleasure.
We're coming.
You ready, Sarah?
You can kick it without me.
Right. You
But all I really need is you. All I really need is you, darling. All I really need is you. Rich or poor, I trade it all for another moment with you. For another moment with you. And it's a mean old world, and it'll eat you up. No, not if I'm with you. No, not if I'm with you. I ain't got no money, darling, but all I really need, all I really need is you. All I really need is you. All I really need is you. We're all living in the struggle. We're all working on our dreams. Someday we're gonna get there. Remember how we used to sing. Got no money, darling, but all I really need, all I really need is you. All I really need is you. All I really need is you. You're all I really need. And it's easy to see it's pure. And it's easy to see it's true. And it's easy. Oh, with you. In the struggle, we're all working on our dreams. Someday we're gonna get there. Remember how we used to sing. I ain't got no money yet, but all I really need is you. But all I really need is you, darling. All I really need is you. Hey.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.